Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. The war in Gaza is becoming a major issue in the American political campaign, which is very rare. Generally, foreign policy doesn't play a significant role in elections. Elections are determined by issues like the economy. It's the economy, stupid. Issues like immigration and issues like abortion, maybe gun control, issues that affect every American. But what we're seeing is a really very, very nasty debate over support for Israel with the hard left of the Democratic Party saying to President Biden that they're not going to vote for him if he continues to support Israel. And there's no way that even if Biden were to abandon Israel, there's no way he would ever give the hard left enough. They don't want a ceasefire. They want the end of Israel. They want Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. They want everything. They don't want compromise. They don't want a two-state solution. The problem is that Biden has a two-state solution. His two states, however, are Michigan and Minnesota, or Michigan, and Michigan is clearly the key state, but maybe it's Michigan and Pennsylvania, Michigan and Nevada. Two states that may, for him, determine the outcome of the election. He's particularly focused on Michigan because Michigan has a population of several hundred thousand Muslims and Arabs who will never be satisfied with a president who supports Israel in any way. And the ceasefire is just a pretext. What does a ceasefire mean at this point? There was a ceasefire on October 6th. And obviously that's what Hamas took advantage of, the ceasefire. Israel was not prepared, and they came in and engaged in a mini Holocaust, slaughtering more Jews in one day than have died since the end of World War II. And as soon as that happened, the hard left turned against Israel before Israel sent a single soldier into Gaza. So, you know, what's going on in Gaza is an excuse. It's an excuse. It's an excuse for the National Lawyers Guild, who on October 8th said, what Hamas did was commendable, it's wonderful. It's what armies do against other armies. Yeah, rape women and behead children. And 33 groups at Harvard said it was all Israel's fault that its citizens got killed. And you know, the Me Too movement, Me Too except if you're a Jew. No, we haven't seen evidence of rape. We haven't seen any videotapes. Show us a videotape of an actual rape. Well, you know, even if you show us a videotape, maybe she really was consenting. Maybe she was into S&M. You know, they have found every excuse. Me Too is the phoniest organization in the world when it comes to really defending victims of rape. They selectively defend victims of some rapes, not others. The same thing is true of Black Lives Matter. The same thing is true of diversity, equity, and inclusion. They pick their targets, and Israel always seems to be, and the United States always seems to be outside of their state of interest. But it's becoming very, very political. And I think Biden is making a terrible mistake. He's miscalculating. As you know, I'm a Democrat, and I generally will vote for Democrats. And I have to tell you that from the point of view of a Democrat, Biden's making a terrible mistake. Because if he abandons Israel, he may pick up 200,000, 300,000 votes in Michigan. But he's going to lose many, many, many more votes in Pennsylvania, in Nevada, in Arizona, in other states, in Florida. Who knows? Maybe it's possible he could win Florida with the influx of many residents of Puerto Rico now who tend to vote, many of them Democrats. So he's playing with fire, and he's making a horrible, horrible mistake. He's also making a moral mistake. And you have the left wing of the Democratic Party today on CNN, which has become so anti-Israel. You know, they try hard. Jake Tapper, there's a place he has for Israel in his heart, but, you know, he wants to get his salary. And Dana Bash. And they all essentially support the Hamas side of the story. They put on interviewers from the Gaza who show only the dead babies, and the dead babies are there because Hamas uses them as human shields, but very rarely presents the other side of the issue. For example, just yesterday, Israel went into the Al-Shafra Hospital, Shafra Hospital, the largest hospital in northern Gaza, and they did it surgically and killed very, very few people, but the people they killed were terrorists, 20 of them, and they arrested 200 of them. And there were 35,000 people in the hospital compound. And the numbers of people who were killed, civilians who were not sympathizers or helpers of Hamas, was minimal. You know, no country in the history of warfare has ever taken more concern to protect the lives of civilians than Israel. And no country has succeeded. The ratio of civilians to combatants killed is about 1-to-1, maybe 1.2-to-1, but not even close to 2-to-1. And no country in history has ever achieved that result. But you wouldn't believe it if you listened to CNN. And if you listen to, they interviewed a congresswoman from, I think, Vermont today, whose parents were Holocaust survivors. And this is what she said. I'm quoting you exactly. A vote for Trump is a vote for Netanyahu. What kind of nonsense is that? A vote for Trump is a vote for Netanyahu. We're not talking about Netanyahu. We're talking about Israel. He's the prime minister, the elected prime minister. You wouldn't know that from Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. He is telling the Israelis who to vote for. And the president, President Biden, is saying that was a good speech. No, it wasn't a good speech. It was an awful speech. And Congressman Adam Schiff is commending it, although not going as far as either Schumer or Biden. But Schumer or Biden are more concerned about Michigan than they are about Gaza. And that shows. And the idea that the majority leader of the United States Senate, who calls himself the highest ranking Jew in the history of America, and he calls himself Schumer, which is Hebrew for Shomer, the guardian of Israel, to come out and try to interfere with domestic Israeli politics, and then basically, Jake Sullivan, who's a decent guy, accuses Israel of interfering in American politics. There's an enormous, enormous difference between those accusations. Obviously, Israelis have a right to have a preference as to who is going to be president. But here you have Schumer and Biden, who provide arms for Israel, basically threatening Israel. And recently, Biden hinted, not quite said, but that if Israel doesn't listen to his red lines, he might suggest cutting off ammunition and arms to Israel. Let me tell you, that's my red line. I want President Biden to understand this clearly. If he cuts off arms to Israel and prevents Israel from defending itself against Hamas aggression, I promise you, I will not vote for Joe Biden. You know, people have said to me on the show over and over again, how do we get you not to vote for Joe Biden? Well, that's the one way to get me not to vote for Joe Biden. If he prevents Israel from defending itself against this horrible aggression that was waged on October 7th, and that Hamas says they will repeat, they're not shy about it, they'll repeat it. If the president of the United States prevents Israel from getting the arms it has been promised and that it justifiably deserves and that it is entitled to. Remember, Israel provides the United States with so much information, intelligence, technological information. It helped it build the Iron Dome and helped it prevent so many acts of domestic terrorism in the United States. If Biden ever does cut off aid, he's crossed my red line. Barack Obama already crossed my red line, as you probably know. He called me to the Oval Office. He persuaded me that, you know, he's Israel's good friend. He'll never abandon Israel. He has Israel's back. I didn't realize it meant to paint the target. And then as he was leaving office, he gave Israel a goodbye gift. He declared the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, the holiest site in Judaism, comparable to the Vatican or in Mormon places in Utah. The holiest site of Judaism, he declared that to be occupied territory. He declared the Hebrew University, the roads to and from it, to be occupied territory. That was my red line. I've never spoken to Obama again. I would never vote for him again. I regret having voted for him the second time. And he's no longer a friend. We were friends. I knew him well as a student. He would come to my office and sit outside because his mentor was my office mate. And there would always be a cigarette dangling from his mouth, and he would have his leather jacket, and he would look like what we used to call a hard guy in Brooklyn. And he would be sitting there and waiting for Professor Charles Ogletree. And I would sit next to him, talk and schmooze. He was president of the Law Review, so we had a lot to talk about. And then he invited me to the White House over and over again. I think I was the only non-government official with my wife to be invited to the White House to see President Shimon Peres given the Medal of Freedom. It was a great honor, and I was there, and I appreciate it. But that doesn't change my views. If you cross my red lines, it's over. And I have to tell you, I think I speak for a lot of not only Jews. I speak for a lot of Jews, but I think I speak for a lot of non-Jews, Christian supporters of Israel, who may be on the fence as between Biden and Trump, or may even be on Biden's side right now, as I am. If you cross that red line, I will go out and campaign and urge people not to vote for you. If they support Israel, if they support American alliances with democracies over American support fraternities. Let me tell you something about the war. The war in Gaza would be over today. There'd be a permanent ceasefire. The hostages would have been returned if Biden had only stuck to his guns. In the beginning, he said, I support Israel. I support the overthrow of Hamas. Let Israel do what it has to do. And then came Michigan. And the threats, and woke, and the left. And it frightened him. His political advisor said to him, you know, you could lose Michigan. If you lose Michigan, you might lose the election. And so Biden backed away. And that's why Hamas is still fighting. If Hamas knew that Israel had the unequivocal support of the United States, and it would never back down, and it would always veto resolutions at the Security Council against Israel, Hamas would not continue fighting. They would give back the hostages, call for a ceasefire. The war would be over. So, yes, I am pointing a finger of blame at President Biden for not doing what he should have done, which could have ended the war more quickly. It could have saved more lives. Hectoring Israel doesn't save lives. Lecturing, threatening Israel doesn't save lives. What saves lives is ending the war victoriously for Israel with total defeat and destruction of Hamas. And that won't come about if you have Jake Sullivan and President Obama and President Biden and Chuck Schumer and the others saying, no, we don't like Netanyahu. 80% of Israelis may dislike Netanyahu, but they favor his war aims. They support going into Rafah. They support killing the remaining or capturing the remaining Hamas commanders, destroying the two battalions that remain. Imagine if this war ends with Hamas still having two battalions, major leaders, Sinwar, the leader, still alive and well. He will announce that he's won the war. And, you know, Biden correctly said about Ukraine, if Ukraine is allowed to be defeated by Putin, Putin's not stopping in Kiev. He's moving on. He might go to Poland. He might go to Lithuania, to Latvia, to Estonia. He may go to Finland. Who knows? And I say the same thing about Hamas. If Hamas isn't stopped now in Gaza, it's coming to a theater near you. This is in the interest of the United States of America. And Biden is not doing his job. And Schumer is not doing his job. And Adam Schiff is not doing his job. And that Jewish congresswoman from Vermont, whose parents were Holocaust survivors, is not doing her job. How dare you tell Americans that a vote for Trump is a vote for Netanyahu, as if to scare them away? Americans don't get to vote for Netanyahu, and they don't get to vote against Netanyahu, and they don't get to threaten what happens if Israelis disagree with them. Israel is the most democratic country in the Middle East, and perhaps one of the most democratic countries in the entire world? What other country has had five elections in the last 7 or 8 years? What other country's major newspaper, Haaretz, is constantly attacking Netanyahu and attacking the Israeli government? Israel, there are demonstrations every Saturday night and most Tuesdays and Wednesdays. It's a vibrant democracy. And it's a democracy that doesn't engage in domestic violence. When they had this great dispute about judicial reform, and even now the dispute about whether there should be a ceasefire and try to get the hostages back, there's no violence. They're demonstrations. They're political demonstrations that Americans should try to emulate and be proud of. Israel is our democratic ally, and we don't get to tell them who to elect. They know who to elect. In fact, right now, if there were an election today, they would not elect Netanyahu. Who knows what would happen after the war if Hamas is defeated? But let the Israeli political system operate. Let the checks and balances, which they have. They have an active Supreme Court. They have a Knesset. They have an active media. They have people involved in protests every day. And they have elections all the time. They're not definitive elections often, because the Israeli political system is complicated. But keep your nose out of Israeli politics, just the way Israelis should keep their noses out of American politics. We are sister democracies. We get to vote for our own people. We are loyal to our country. Yeah, I wear a pin. You can see it. It has Israel and the United States. I support both. I'm an American. I love America. But I'm a Jew, and I'm a Zionist. And I support Israel. On Saturday, I marched with my friends in the St. Patrick's Day parade. Nobody called any of the folks there disloyal. They support Ireland. My other friends, great friends who support Italy, they love Italy. They have Italian flags in their office. That's not dual loyalty. Everybody has multiple loyalties. If you're a woman and American, some people put women's rights before the interests of America. If you're Jewish, you support, many do support Israel. If you're, Pakistani, you support Pakistan as well. We're a country of immigrants, and a country of immigrants always has people who have multiple loyalties. Our loyalty to America comes first. We love America. America, if you're a Jew, saved us from the Holocaust. If the borders of America weren't open to my grandfather in 1889 and my other grandparents in the beginning of the 19th century, I would have been 4 or 5 years old when the Jews of my grandparents' hometown were taken to Auschwitz and murdered in cold blood. I would have been murdered in cold blood. And I continue to thank America. My grandfather helped rescue 29 members of our family from Brno, Czechoslovakia, on the eve of the Second World War. It's one of the proudest moments of his life. And my uncle just wrote a whole book about the history of our family, and that episode is featured in the book. And so, don't accuse us of any kind of dual loyalty. We have every good person has multiple loyalties to their church, to their synagogue, to their mosque. And that's America. We're not like Nazi Germany, where you had to be German über alles. No, we can have multiple loyalties as long as our primary loyalty remains with the greatest country in the history of the world, the United States of America. And we have to keep it that way. I don't mean to emulate any particular politician's slogan about keeping America great or making America great, but we are a unique country, and we are the country that is the that is everybody in the world loves. Why do we have an immigration problem? China doesn't have an immigration problem. Iran doesn't have an immigration problem. Even France, it has an immigration problem only from Northern Africa. But we don't have, everybody wants to come to America. When they stop people at the border and you check, they're Chinese, they're Indonesian, they're, from other parts of South America, they're from Europe, they're from, you name it. Everybody wants to be an American because America has been and continues to be the greatest country in the history of the world. Let's keep it that way. And let's make sure that we keep our alliances straight, and we make sure that we support our allies and support our friends. Having said that, let me also say something critical of former President Trump. You should not go around saying that Jewish Democrats, Jews who vote Democrat, I vote Democrat. I don't know how I'm going to vote in this election, but since the day John Kennedy ran, I have voted Democrat. Don't tell me that I hate my religion. I love being a Jew. Don't tell me that I hate Israel. That's wrong. And it's just empirically wrong. Democrats who support Biden, many of them love America, love Israel, and love Judaism. They have other priorities. Many Democrats, as I've told President Trump personally, on several occasions, Jews vote Democrat because they support the Democrat position on abortion, on gun control, on climate control, on Supreme Court, on gay and transgender rights. Jews tend to be liberal. That doesn't mean we hate Israel. We love Israel. We can be critical of Israel, critical of the United States. Loving a country doesn't mean you have to support every aspect of it. And so every American Jew should have the right to vote Democrat or Republican. I have a hunch that more will vote Republican this year than used to because of the fact that Biden may be crossing some red lines for some people. Everybody has their own red line. I told you what my red line is. If you stop supplying ammunition and arms to Israel and deny them the right to defend themselves, you have crossed my red line. I hope that doesn't happen. I now have a more open mind than I ever did have about who I will vote for in this election. The Democratic Party cannot take me and people who listen to me, people who vote the way I do, they can't take us for granted. Sorry, we're not just Democrats with a big D. We're Democrats with a small D. We're Republicans with a small R. And if the big D, big R wants us, they have to make the case. And for many years, the Democrats made the better case. Let me put it this way. The Republicans made the worst case. I found it difficult. I voted for Republicans, for libertarian, liberal Republicans, Bill Weld and others. But I had a hard time voting for Republicans who didn't believe in the separation of church and state, who didn't believe in a woman's right, at least at certain point in her pregnancy, to have an abortion and other issues. So I have an open mind. I don't know, as I sit here today, who I will vote for and who I will vote against. I'm waiting to hear what No Labels is coming up with. I'm friendly with Bobby Kennedy, but I won't vote for him. He knows that. I've known him since he's a young man. And of course, I've known Joe Biden for the last 43 years. I've known Donald Trump for some number of years. As an American, as a Jew, I have an open mind. Just show me why, as an American and as a Jew and as a civil libertarian and as a libertarian and as a, show me why I should vote for you and make your case. And in November, I'll make up my mind. And I hope any of you who have open minds will do the same thing. But my warning, and it's as clear as can be to President Biden, an old friend, if you cross that red line and deny Israel the right to defend itself, I will not vote for you. End of discussion. I will not vote for you. Okay, let's look at some letters. Did you predict that Wade would get away with lying under oath? Yeah, I did. And he has up to now. I would hope there would be a criminal investigation and we would see both of them investigated. And if evidence justified it, indicted for perjury. Thank you for your help for our Gold Star family pro bono. My hat's off to you, sir. And I salute you as a true hero, as well as the young man. I'm so sorry that that man's father, it sickens me to the core. What in God's name has happened to our politicians? I feel like I'm in a nightmare. I'm 62 years old and the changes are abhorrent. God bless you, Dersh. You are a man among men. Thanks. But the lawyers haven't yet called me. I hope they'll drop the charges against the Gold Star father. It's outrageous to think about criminally prosecuting somebody who simply shouted out his son's name, his son who should never have been killed. But we should never have allowed that kind of death in our unfortunate and hasty and unprepared exodus from Afghanistan. So I give kudos to that father, and I'm behind you 100%. I'm also behind my friend Sid, Sid in the Morning, who shouted out, "Says who?" The Brooklyn slogan, "Says who?" when President Biden wrongly, erroneously said that the 30,000 people were killed in Gaza, most of whom were civilians. "Says who?" says the Hamas health agencies, which we know makes up figures and makes up facts. All right, the Eighth Amendment specifically mentions excessive fines. It does. But until recently, it was thought to be part of a grouping of criminal activities, cruel and unusual punishment, excessive bail, excessive fines, those generally apply in criminal cases. But a fine imposed by the attorney general, by the state, as punishment by a judge is criminal punishment, as far as I'm concerned. It quacks like a duck, it looks like a duck, and it should be covered by the Eighth Amendment, and I hope it is. And I hope that, I have to make a correction. This letter came in, and I think he's right. I haven't checked it out, but I think he's right. An undertaking, bond undertaking, is required only to stay enforcement of the judgment. It is not a condition of appeal. And then he cites the law and says that many people on television have been saying that it denies them the right to appeal. Well, you're right. And I'm partly right, because if the judgment can be executed, that means the state can take all the property and dispose of it and sell it and destroy it. And let me tell you, if Letitia James, who's already been a terrible attorney general, becomes a terrible landlord, I can imagine what would happen to 40 Wall Street and the Trump Towers. So, you know, the appeal may very well be mooted in large part, but he does technically have the right to continue the appeal, though he can't hold on to his property in the interim. So I accept that correction, and I should have myself made that distinction, and I didn't. Can the Supreme Court step in and say a judge who put so much of a huge bond on Trump say it's unconstitutional? Well, it has to work its way up. Here's the way it could work. If the court refuses to allow an appeal and they start taking away his property, it is possible that they could go into federal court and seek a stay on the ground of the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment clause. I think that would be an uphill fight, but it probably would be worth pursuing. Okay. I'm a Republican and the worst kind, a Christian conservative, not in my book, you're not worse, and a MAGA supporter. But I feel so fortunate and lucky to be able to listen to this man on a regular basis. America would be truly again if all Democratic politicians had the intellect and common sense of this lawyer. Now, I'm not going to comment on his nice things that he says about me, but it would be a better country if people listened to each other. I used to love listening to William Buckley, who was an arch conservative, an arch Republican, somebody I disagreed with on so many issues, on abortion, on gay rights, on so many issues. But every time I listened to Bill Buckley, I learned something. And I remember once we had a debate on his show, and at the end of the show, we went out and we had a drink. And he said, "Alan, I disagree with you so much, but every time you're on my show, I learn something from you." And I responded by saying, "And every time I'm on your show, I learn something from you." And that's the essence of dialogue, and we don't have it. You could not have the Lincoln-Douglas debates today, because half the country would say, "We don't want to hear Douglas," and half the country would say, "We don't want to hear Lincoln." And people would not listen to both sides. I cannot speak today on the Harvard University campus. I only taught there for 50 years. I was probably the most popular professor for many of those years, certainly as evidenced by the fact of how many students try to get into my class, including Barack Obama, who didn't make it. But I can't speak there anymore because they don't want to hear my issues. Cardozo Law School, a Jewish law school under the auspices of Yeshiva University. A group invited me. The dean said, no, Dershowitz is too controversial. We don't want to hear his views. And today, people just don't want to hear controversial views. And that's why I've been canceled in so many settings. So here's one more letter. Again, it's complimentary, but I want to focus on the second part of it. "We are so blessed to have you as a great advisor. I am a Kurd from Iran, and I am so disappointed that all crimes committed against the Kurds in Iran, and no one mentions the Kurds. Only people are concerned about is politicians." You're absolutely right. And the Sudan, there's a real genocide going on in Sudan and real starvation. Let me tell you, there is no famine or starvation going on in Gaza. And to the extent that some people are still hungry, it's because Hamas is stealing the food. They have been crying wolf in Gaza now for months, right from the beginning. Oh, we're all starving. We're all starving. And then you see photographs of food markets with plenty of food. Yeah, there's a problem as distribution of the food, getting to the wrong people, getting to Hamas. But in Sudan, there's real starvation. Hundreds and hundreds of people are dying from not getting any food. And when's the last time you saw a march for Sudan? You ask these little idiots, these Nazi youth, these Hitler youth that are marching with these banners in favor of Hamas. You ask them about Sudan, they would say, what's that? And then you ask them about Palestine, they would say, what's that? They know the word, but they have no idea where it is. From the river to the sea, what river, what sea? Sudan, what about Sudan? What about other human rights tragedies that are going on in the world? How the Kurds are being attacked, how the Uyghurs are being attacked in China. Not a word. The only people that are being marched against are the Jews of Israel. Me too, except if you're a Jew. And that has permeated the hard left. The vicious anti-Semitism of the hard left is inexcusable. And for me, that too is a red line. See you tomorrow.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.